This is Chris Jansen with the End Evil podcast. Evil is the destruction of freedom. And today I have my special guest, Brandon Martin, with me. Thanks for joining me, Brandon.
Oh, it's amazing to be back on your show, Chris. I've been waiting to get back on here and talk with you for a long time since we did the Aliens breakdown, which I believe was very well received. And I just love what we brought to the table with that. It was really fun to do that.
Yeah, and I think you and I are both, you stated that in our recent conversation, lifetime aficionados of symbolism in all its forms. And the episode that I'm playing, which will be last Thursday when you're watching this, audience, we really went through all the different types of symbolism, not all the types, but the ones I thought were most prominent, obvious, I used the most. Talked about terms and grammar in the way of symbolism. And it's really interesting to me symbolically that as this topic has been arising from me and my own journey of what do I display on the End Evil podcast next, here parallel Brandon is publishing a multi-series, multi-episode series, and symbolism is one of his main topics. What's the title of your series, Brandon?
It's called Beyond the Forbidden Veil, is what it's called. And then it has subtitles. So this next episode will be called A Universal Language.
Fantastic. It's like these subjects of freedom, natural law, truth, care. Those are the main words I like to describe to kind of cover the whole genre area of things we're talking about. And then there's just so much within that that can be like layers of an onion kind of peeled apart, and then it brings new realizations and meanings. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about why I think symbolism is so appropriate and important for the discussion that we're having with the audience right now. So I'll let you start by describing why you see symbolism as being so important and pertinent to what's going on right now in the world.
Well, as far as how I look at symbolism, I think that the first thing is we notice a blatant attack on our hemispheres, right? Our right and left brain. And one of the main attacks, especially through the educational system, is the right brain. Is that, I can hear your mowers. There we go. Yep. So it is an attack on the right brain, which correlates to symbolic literacy, pattern recognition, the sacred feminine energy and feminine, principle, you could say. So obviously the powers that be, the elite, the dark occultists, whoever you want, whatever you want to name them, has a specific interest in making us symbolically illiterate. And I think that's very important to understand. And whenever you notice that they're trying to weaken or they're specifically attacking this part of our psychology, of our neurology, of our consciousness and our spirituality, then it obviously has great value. Now, as I started to dive deeper into symbolism, I started to unfold, because that's what really, really it does for you. It's an unfoldment of a spiritual truth or principle. As you get deeper into symbolism. And when I started to unveil it, the first thing I got interested in was the subversive use of it. This is what a lot of people get caught up in, is the subversive, the bad use of it through marketing manipulation, through politics, through media, through movies, through music, you know, whatever it might be. But we notice it everywhere. It is prevalent throughout all culture, on all, you know, throughout all history. No matter what. So throughout all culture and throughout all history. But we do see a rise of the sacred symbols being used for a perversive mean to manipulate the psychology and the consciousness of the individual to bring about a certain agenda, right? So now that I've explained that, I would say that the way that I look at symbolism is that it is a universal language. It is a universal principle that is a emergent property of reality, where it allows us to communicate through forms or through representation or concepts. So it's very interesting, because symbolism can get very abstract in the philosophical sense, but Symbolism on the most simplest level is simply a representation of an idea, a concept, a relationship, or, you know, of a principle that reveals a truth to you. That's the thing that I would want to bring to the table, is to understand that symbolism reveals a truth of some sort about your spiritual nature, or about maybe the manipulation that's taking place, or maybe it reveals something about your relationships, or something about yourself, your higher self, your lower self. It can reveal so much to us. And the cool thing about symbolism, I think this is one of the most profound things, is that as you go back to symbolism, as you raise your consciousness and go back to symbolism over and over and over, it will continue to unfold as long as you're bringing new information back to that symbol. You know, so maybe the circle dot is just one thing to you at one time period in your life. You raise your consciousness, you gain some more analytical data, you gain some more insight and some good intuition. And the next thing you know, you come back to that dot and that circle dot, and then you realize, oh man, there's so much more in this simple form, this simple symbol. So it's a process of unfoldment.
Oh, I really love what you said about the feminine aspect. Something that I touched on a little bit is the fact that there is this intuitive aspect to interpreting symbols, understanding them on different levels. Some are super obvious, you know, like the start button on your computer, you know, but some are a little, they go deeper and deeper and deeper. And the feminine, the sacred feminine, something that we've seen a lot of discussion. I've been so illuminated by how Mark Passio has described this, but Logan Hart's really good with the male feminine, the male and feminine aspects of our reality and life. And we know this is our hermetic truth, you know, of gender, and we see it in all things. And it occurred to me while you were saying about symbolism having this feminine aspect, I was thinking about a woman being pregnant, and how when we see a woman who's pregnant, we see this, like you were saying, emerging, right? We see this indication of this circular shape forming in the belly. And what does that shape represent? Well, it signifies, right? It tells us that there's a new life coming to this planet. And most people with a reasonable mind respect that with great care. That's one of the most precious things for a human, is seeing the birth of a new child, right? But it could also represent this birthing process is an idea or a thought or a realization, you know, and someone first, two people come into contact and they have this intercourse of conversation or ideas, and something is sprouted, something is learned. Sometimes in a conversation, something sort of breaks through, just like breaking through the egg, right? And then it has a chance to build inside there. And this is like when we plant an idea in our own mind or in someone else's, and then it becomes real in time, and into the material world it is birthed. And sometimes that birthing process can be uncomfortable to come to certain realizations, right? Or a little bit surprising, not quite what you expected them to be as they come out into the real world. So that's fantastic introduction to symbolism, and kind of like what we're talking about, the feminine aspect. And we're trying to bring back the divine feminine in how we care for our grammar and how we care for our communication between people. And what we've recognized, those of us who like to talk about natural law, like it or not, that care to speak about truth and what the world needs to realize, because there are so many things occulted, hidden, that we recognize that most people don't seem to have the tools to understand what is going on in the world around us. And they're acting as if the world is just a material-based situation, and they're living from the point of view of an ego-based, what I call the undead in the slide from last week, an ego-based, myopic, self-centered, which actually amounts to de facto Satanism in so many ways. So all that to say, to me, getting around to symbolism is offering your average person out there a bridge, an opportunity, a way to come to deeper realizations and start to see the world for what it really is, and to be able to discern and recognize the truth of the scenario. And until you're able to see through the shroud of, like you were saying, the Bernays advertising, the political corruption through time, convincing people that things need to be done a certain way, and that's the only way to do things. And all these things have mixed together to create a very false world of materialistic, egoistic viewpoints. And I think symbolism is one of the arrows that can shoot a hole in that and break it open so people can see all these layers of truth in the onion.
That's right.
I gave you a lot to talk about, I bet.
Yeah, that's a lot. I always say that symbolism will be their downfall. And what I mean by that is by revealing the actual meaning of the symbolic nature, not only of reality and ourselves, because we are symbols as well, but also the way that it's being used subversively against our psychology, which I would consider to be a neurological holocaust or a psychic tyranny, is going to give us the tools and give us the empowerment to be able to defend ourselves against that onslaught on our mind, and also be able to understand why symbols are so sacred to, you know, the human species, to the universe, and be able to use those in a more conscious way for the correct outcomes under natural law. You know, I think that's very important, because we get caught up in, we have this dialectic that goes on where a lot of people think that symbols mean only one thing, or they are just subjective and they don't mean anything at all, or they can mean whatever you want, right? So symbols can actually go both ways. On one level, you can add a meaning to a symbol. On another level, and this is where my research goes and my work goes into symbolism, when you remove all of the outer shell of that symbol, right, you get to the essence, the divine essence, the objective truth of that symbol that remains universal. And I think that's what many philosophers, many ancient cultures were trying to instill before the symbolism became a detritus of what it originally was, meaning it fractured, it balkanized, it broke up into smaller pieces, and then we just kept converting it by adding more dogma on top of it. So my work always tries to remove the dogma and get to the original truth, the original meaning of the symbol. So I would like to start out with a working definition of a symbol, which is a working definition that I am using in my new series in episode 2. And I'll share the screen on this so we can pull this up here, share screen. And then
fantastic. And I just want to real briefly, while you're bringing that up, Brandon, just remind folks, if I went through a lot of struggle in my life as a younger person, understanding the difference between subjective and objective. And I think those terms still confuse a lot of people. And if you're one of those folks that aren't completely sure, like, take some time right now, go look up these two words, understand the difference between subjective and objective. You know, objective is our ability to remove ourselves and to look at something from almost like in a book. You know, a book often looks at the whole situation from an omnipotent point of view. And we have this cognitive ability to not have our emotions and an experience always flavoring how we think about everything to an extent. It's not always 100% possible to be 100% objective. And I think that's where the confusion lies with some folks. But I'd like you to go on. I just wanted to kind of interject the importance of understanding those words and what they mean.
Yeah, that's very, very important. I definitely will say that some of my work is in the advanced class. So I'm going to speak to you as if you have done your homework. If you have not, just make sure to dive into it. Go back, review this work, look up the words, look up the etymology, look up the historical context or the philosophical context of what I'm talking about or what Chris is talking about. So yeah, I think that's very important to give to the layman's. Absolutely. So I was going to pull up this slide here of symbolism. I don't know if that's pulled up. Yeah.
Oh, you did. And I forgot to turn it on my bed.
That's all right.
There we are. Symbolism.
So this is a working definition that I wrote out or symbolism, to try to simplify this in the best way possible. A symbol is a form that represents or stands for an idea, object, relationship, or other entity, conveying a specific meaning through its association, resemblance, or convention. And this can be put under the banner of the law of correspondence and mentalism and rhythm and all the seven hermetic laws, technically. Symbolic literacy encompasses not just correspondence with hermeticism, but all of the laws of hermeticism or all of the principles. Symbols can be visual, such as iconic or images or mathematical notations, verbal, such as words or phrases, or abstract, such as spiritual truths or universal transcendental concepts. So for that bigger, wordier concept there, universal transcendental concepts, usually gets down to metaphysics, which is a big topic to unveil. I just recommend looking into that if you're interested in understanding what I mean by that. Symbols are a universal language, which are the epistemic, which means the justification for knowledge, basis for all forms of knowledge, communication, arts, religions, sciences, and literature. Symbols are a universal emergent property of reality for the utility of revealing spiritual truths and sciences of nature, like natural law, enabling the individual to understand the self through a process of unfoldment and to convey simple and complex concepts, knowledge, meanings, and ideas in a sublime and effective way or effectively way. There are no means of communicating without the use of symbolic form, whether it is physical or metaphysical. So the way that I'm defining symbolism here is it's not just a physical representation. Whenever you think of a symbol in your mind, you can literally build a conceptual idea, a visual framework of a symbol. You can imagine a circle or a circle dot or circle dot, right? You can imagine a square, a triangle. You can even, in your mind, mold these things together and work with them in your mind. So symbols are not just physical. They're not just in the physical reality. And a lot of these symbols, actually, you don't find in nature. But where you do find them is in the nature of the mind. And I think that's very important to understand, especially under the idea of mentalism. So we get caught up in this idea of worshiping the form, the representation, right? So we get caught up in just looking at the outer shell and not seeing the principle underneath the form. And I think that's the most important essence of what I'm trying to bring to the table, which a lot of people seem to miss out on, is that, yes, the circle is there, but don't get obsessed about the circle itself. I'm talking about the principle underneath that enhances your consciousness by relaying a specific meaning or some sort of spiritual or divine or epistemic truth for the individual, so that they can make better use of themselves, their consciousness, and better use of the tools available and the resources available to them in nature. So here's an example of symbols. You can take that down now. An example of symbols is in nature, right? So would be like a dark cloud. You brought up a great example, a pregnant individual, a pregnant woman, right? Not a pregnant man, though. a pregnant woman. But let's look at the dark cloud. This is a real simple concept. This is great for teaching children this. A dark cloud can represent a fundamental thing that potentially could take place in the future. And what we associate really dark clouds on the horizon with, if there's wind, if it's getting really windy, it's getting colder, there's all these other associations that are going on. These are all symbolic forms of nature. We associate it to a storm. There's a storm on the horizon. Maybe there's a storm already happening somewhere else, right? So that dark cloud can be a symbolic representation of that storm, and it's allowing our consciousness to be prepared for a storm. That's one means for symbolism, so that we can be prepared, and now we know we need to seek shelter. Go inside, you know, close your windows, whatever it might be. Find a cave, whatever you need to do, right? Don't really get under the tree if it's lightning, but, you know, get somewhere where there's some shelter, obviously. But
yeah, that's an indication of an ominous, ominous, right?
Yes.
Something coming that we don't know how bad it's going to be yet.
Yes.
And you see that cloud and it tells you, oh boy, especially if you're a farmer, that might have a whole nother set of implications. And so it's not always going to mean the exact same thing to every person. Imagine you're at sea and you're right. sailing and you see those dark clouds. You know, it's the same dark clouds that the farmer's seeing, but your actions and interpretation of that symbolic representation might mean different things. It might mean, oh, let's start pulling the oars. It might mean yes. take down the sails. It might mean, let's get inside. It might mean, oh, we need to cover some things up, you know,
if that's you're on the job
site. So another thing before I want you to keep going, but I was going to say metaphysical, I think is really important. People, after or beyond is what meta basically means. So what we're talking about is if you can imagine something physical, we're imagining what's beyond that or what can we think after that. And so whether it's the pregnant woman symbolizing the birth or the ominous clouds symbolizing the rain or the storm coming, metaphysical is we're taking things to the next level.
Yes, that is correct. And I'll just add in a little quote here by Alvin Boyd Kuhn, who is an amazing author and scholar. You don't have to share this. This actually isn't his quote, but we can read this quote too. This is Edwin Powell Hubble, and he actually is the guy who worked on the Hubble, telescope and stuff like that. He says, "All nature is a vast symbolism. Every material fact has sheathed within it a spiritual truth." And then, as I said, Alvin Boyd Kuhn goes on to say, which I don't have a slide for this, is symbolism is the language of the mysteries. In fact, it is the language not only of mysticism and religious philosophy, but all nature. And I think that's really important to understand because, as you were pointing out, we have the utility, as I was saying as well, of like, hey, these things are helping us to make use of our environment. For agriculture purposes, it might be good to have some rain, you know, or a naval, you know, ship or something like this might not be such a good thing to be out on the ocean at that time. So, you know, you need to put your sails down. You need to get ready, right? Like that stuff's going to get hairy. So, I think it's important to understand that. But I also think it's important to understand that ideas are very conceptual. So the way that we define ideas is very ambiguous. And one question I would like to add to ask to the audience, are your ideas your own? How do you know that you have your own ideas? Where do they come from? What are their origins? Are your ideas coming from culture? Are they an original thought of your own? Well, the ancients thought of ideas as archetypes of the mind. If you look up the etymology of idea, that's literally what it means. It's the archetype of the mind of God or the divine or nature. There's many different definitions, but that's pretty much what it meant, or an image of the mind of God. So a lot of people think in this way that it is a channeling of the one great spirit into ourselves, into our monad consciousness. And yes, it's our idea, but it's connected to collective consciousness, right? And another thing I would like to say on symbolism is that it also helps you to dig deep into the subconscious realm, to deal with the shadow self. Right. I think that's really important. The shadow self is a symbol itself. It's a model for us to understand and work with certain psychological aspects of ourselves, usually the repressed aspects, which are not necessarily negative repressed aspects. They're positive ones as well. The shadow self doesn't just mean a negative thing. A lot of people in the New Age communities talk about it like it's all negative stuff. It's all about your trauma. Well, no, it's also like the positive things that you repressed about yourself that you have not fully understood how to express properly in a healthy way. So those are symbols. That's a Jungian symbol or Jungian symbol. And I think that's very important to understand. So symbolism is so vast, right? We find it everywhere throughout every culture. They're always using it. There's symbols all over the place. And I think it's one of the most beautiful things that we could ever study. And the more that you study it, the more you understand yourself. That is absolutely for sure.
And the reality and world around us, you talked about symbols being intimately connected to nature. In fact, even a reflection of nature. And I like that term, Neter, the Egyptian term Neter, and the symbol that goes along with the term Neter. I'm sure that shows up somewhere in your presentation, what kind of looks like a flag in a way. It's just like sort of an open space, kind of like the symbol of a circle, which represents us looking into this thing and seeing it for what it is. And so I think that's important to understand this idea of nature, that this is not man-made. And kind of like when we talk about natural law, this is not man-made. This is binding. This is unchanging. This is pre-existing to our conception of it. And we come to recognize it. And I've noticed that many times, especially I've described it like when I walk in nature or trees, I wonder, are these thoughts coming from the trees? You know, were they in the air and I walked into the ideas? Because it definitely feels like you're finding inspiration. It doesn't feel like I'm creating the inspiration. It feels like my mind's putting things together. So in other words, that flag, that Neter flag, just represents the structure. That's all nature is, the structure of things. And structures do have shapes, not always the same shapes, but there are shapes, like the Platonic shapes, built into reality. Mm-hmm. That's what nature is. The Neter is describing that whatever this is, this God, this divine reality, it has aspects to it that we call archetypes that are, you can find them. You can look and look and look and you can find them. And then someone else generations later can find the same shapes and the same concepts and ideas. They're embedded in the way that plants move, the way that seeds form. All these shapes are naturally occurring, naturally occurring.
That's right. You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. And as I said at the beginning, the nature of all the mysteries, or specifically the mystery traditions or mystery schools and secret societies, use symbolic forms to communicate their hidden spiritual truths to the initiates. I think it's very, very important. As we move away from understanding symbolism, right, I've noticed that we actually move more into materialism. So the great materialistic illusion is that things have no meaning beyond their physical appearance. And this is what people get stuck on. They get stuck on the physical appearance. But the true scholar and the true esotericist, or the mystic, whatever you want to put a name on it as, understand that the symbol is a gateway to higher truths, to a spiritual truth, to a principle that will allow you to make use of, you know, many different things in the world. So this is something I always like to say to people too. We look at the occult in the common colloquial idea as a evil thing, when we all know, at least us in this field, know that occultism simply means hidden knowledge. It comes from the Latin word occultare, which means to hide or conceal, which is in context of knowledge, to hide and conceal knowledge. But it also doesn't mean to specifically intentionally hide and conceal knowledge. So this is something I talked about in my first episode of Beyond the Forbidden Veil, which correlates to symbolism, is that when you're born in this world, everything is hidden to you. You have no knowledge of anything. Everything is a natural, hidden property, okay? And your process of understanding the world is of pattern recognition, of critical thinking, of starting to access new neural pathways and stimulate new parts of your brain and your consciousness to make use of this world. You don't know how the tree works. You know, it's hidden from you. It's occulted, but it's not occulted in the sense that I'm keeping a secret. It's occulted in a way by virtue of it existing. You know, it's not meant to be revealed. It's not meant that we have all of the playbooks of every aspect of nature, because then there's no purpose for anything here. There's no purpose for you to even have consciousness to raise, because you know all things. There's no purpose for anything. There is no raising. There is no lowering. It's all equality across the board. And that diversification of how we gain knowledge is so important in this world. So we gain it by becoming occultists naturally. We're all occultists. You know, we all naturally do that process of pattern recognition from infancy up. And that's the process that we're trying to fine tune. And that process specifically really needs a lot of intuitive care. You have to have a lot of that intuition, because intuition is really what's going to guide you as a compass to these answers. And then you apply your intellect into that.
What are the mechanics of a infant learning to walk?
Right.
You know, they see us moving around like that, and then they're kind of right. themselves like, well, can I do that? You know, and they start trying, right? And it also occurred to me, I remember my kids, when you put them at the table and you're about to experience this, when you put them at the table and you give them food and you give them a little tray and stuff, they start taking things off the table and they hold their hand like this and they go, whoop. And then they look to see if the adults are going to do something. You know, it starts out what I used to call gravity testing.
Right.
You know, they literally are testing gravity.
Yep.
If that's I let go of this thing, is it going to fall down? And then they see it falls down like, is that going to happen again? You know, and things fall at different speeds. So, I mean, when you're little, you're still gravity testing. And that's what learning to walk is, right? You know, so you're discovering the boundaries of reality. What happens if I push too hard in this direction? Well, you fall on your face and it hurts. And you're like, that's how it works.
That's right. And that's the nature of the virtue of symbolism in reality, right? And I think that's the thing that a lot of people fail to understand with symbolism is that they think it's just graphic designs. They think it's just, you know, what the marketing is doing, what a movie has in it, you know, just artistic expressions, which it's not in that, in those fields, but it's definitely part of those fields. But the essence of it is what we're trying to get back to. So a lot of people call the essence of these things pure forms. And a lot of great philosophers, a lot of great Masonic teachers, Freemasonic teachers, one of them that I can think of is Albert Churchward, who's a great Masonic teacher. I'd recommend all people to research his work, that's for sure. And then I'd say Manly P. Hall talks about it a lot. You know, all kinds of great occultists talk about this. But whenever you hear us talking about pure forms, you may hear like Nate Kapp talk about it from the Cubbyhole. You may hear Douglas Martin talk about it from Seed Truth. This is how I would look at pure forms. This is how I would define a pure form. A pure form represents the highest reality and the ultimate truths accessible through intellectual and intuitive means. And in anthropology, they manifest in symbols, rituals, and myths of human society, illustrating our collective journey towards enlightenment and our connection to the source. And what I mean by source is the one great spirit, or the one grand architect of the universe. You can call it whatever you want, right? It doesn't really matter to me. Put whatever label on it you want. You can even just call it truth itself, which is probably the most accurate thing you could call it. This synthesis reveals pure forms as a timeless and universal bridging the gap between the material and the spiritual. And this is another way of looking at it, is that a pure form is a blueprint of a truth that has not been altered by dogma. So when we say pure, we're talking about like a perfect form. It has been distilled, like an alchemical distilling, down to its base essence, you know, its fundamental essence of what it actually is. And when you get to that, then you understand how that essence is universal across time and space. It doesn't matter its location, doesn't matter what culture used it. It's always going to represent this thing, right? So the circle is a great example of that. The circle has a universal principle of a creative aspect. It is a womb. It is encompassing. It represents 360. Wholeness, perfection. It's always considered to be the most perfect symbol of all the symbols. The circle is why the Greek philosophers looked at the circle as, you know, perfected form. It's a perfected form to them. And they thought of every orbit of the celestial bodies in perfect circles because they wanted it to be a Platonic ideal in the Greek philosophical sense. But what they wanted it to be is just like perfectly symmetrical in physical reality. But what it really is, it's a perfect form in the mind of God or in the mind of ourselves. And it represents a spiritual truth that helps us to unfold ourselves on our journey to understanding these things. Now, you can use that symbol for a lot of perverted means. You know, you can use it in pornography. You can use it in many different ways to influence people. And the main thing about influencing people with symbolism is that the victim of this, if for lack of a better word, call them a victim, they do not have the knowledge of what the symbol actually means. So they're completely vulnerable to it affecting their subconscious mind. So the way that people get programmed is by repetition of things that they are not aware of through media, through music, you know, listening to the same music over and over and over, watching the same movies over and over and over. And these little bits of symbolic representations seep into the subconscious and bind themselves to our psychic energy. And then we don't have no means of defending ourselves against it. And then it will alter our personality. It will alter our character. It will alter our behaviors. So you can literally program people with symbolism to have a potential to act out certain expressions based upon the type of symbolism that you're using. So let's take really, really disgusting, decadent, you know, rap music, right? Some rap music's fine, but like really, really perverted rap music that you're just listening to it all day long, over and over and over. Well, think about how those people behave, you know? That's seeping into their subconscious mind. And this is how marketing works. They teach you this if you take a class on marketing or graphic design. They'll teach you this in college. They will literally tell you, this is what we're doing. We're using colors to manipulate people. I mean, look at how the colors are used on fast foods. You know, they've changed that up a little bit in the modern era, but that also is a shift of how they're trying to manipulate people. But like reds are used for like, we want you to get in and out. We want you to be more in the desire mind, the lower sexy, chakras. It's sexy. It's hot. You have the Babylonian whore, you know, you have the Scarlet Witch who's always in red, right? Or like the woman in the red dress in the Matrix, right? Great example of that. So they use these color associations to not only program us, but also to get us to express certain things, right? So like the news, they like using a lot of blues, right? That's because blue connects to our psychic expression of receptivity. It makes us more passive. It's a lower, it's a higher frequency on the visible frequency scale, but it's actually making us absorb things more. It's a feminine color, right? A feminine color. This is why we use it in babies' rooms. Blues are really common in bathrooms and baby nurseries, right? To make them sleepy, or we have the blues, right? To make them sad, right? Like that's the thing. Or like music blues, right? You have that. It's not like it's an unintentional thing. It's very well thought out. And these psychic masters, these psychological masters of understanding this language has completely destroyed, you know, they have completely destroyed our ability to understand the mystery schools. Completely. This is why people think it's all hogwash, because they have no ability to pattern recognize. They can't see the ubiquitous nature across all cultures with mythology and understand how that's correlating to a specific hero journey of yourself. That we have no common sense understanding of any of this. And then the other thing is that we also have a natural curiosity and attraction towards it. So you can't get rid of it. Because everybody wants to watch it. Everybody is going to see the Marvel movies, but they have no idea what the symbolic representation of the storm, you know, Stormbringer or whatever, the hammer, the nature of Thor is. You know, they have no understanding that that means nature and power, you know, and they have no concept of that dating back to pre-dynastic Egypt into the Kemetian cultures. They have no concepts of what they're trying to release there. Of like how Thor represents a personified deification of an elemental power like Zeus does in the Greek mythology. The Zeus wielding the lightning bolt, right? Well, he's a personification, an anthropomorphization of a power that's a phenomenon in nature that we're trying to make into a digestible form for us to understand. But then we deify it into this actual being that becomes this messiah, this god, and then we worship that rather than understanding the principle of electricity and the elemental power of Zeus, you know?
What a thing to bring up on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, it is Thursday, isn't it?
Thursday. Yeah. And right. You know what else you made me think of? I thought of a very specific example. in the last few years, a big hit movie documentary came out about NWA, Niggas with an Attitude, right? And they were super popular when I was just getting through junior high. I remember my earlier years of junior high listening to NWA. And the way this documentary comes out, and a lot of people I know, they're, you know, they have these fond memories, and they're presenting NWA as like this, they finally are expressing themselves, you know, and they're expressing the gang life and being on the poor side of the tracks type of thing. And like, it's really got expressed again, even as this documentary, even in people I knew personally, as like this really positive thing, but they're not like taking a few steps back and thinking about like, what effect do you think those words that they were spouting, repeating in all these young people's ears actually had an effect on society? Did it help people to better express themselves artistically and be better human beings? Or did it put people in a deranged state where they, you know, treat women terribly and have expectations that they shouldn't have about their lifetime, you know? So those are very, from my point of view,
groups
like NWA very much engineered from a deeper level of dark occultists that want people to stay poor, that want people to be completely concentrated on the materialistic aspects of life. And one last thing I was going to share that I thought of while you were talking is a mirror is a good symbol for we're talking about, because like, we're living in, if you imagine your real body, this is your real self. The mirror image is not your real self. It's a representation of your real self. It does look like exactly like you look in this moment. And if you blink your eye, it's going to blink too. And that's like this world we're living in that we are calling materialism. It seems very real, but it is a reflection of our spiritual self, and the nature of what we're actually doing is the real part of it. And they're thinking that the mirror is just like a Plato's cave allegory. The materialistic de facto Satanism view is looking as if the mirror is a reality, and
that's
should
right.
be the opposite.
That's but very well said, Chris. That's very well said. And I'm glad you brought up the mirror symbolism. It's a profound symbol that's used throughout all cinema. You can find it. You'll find it being used in cinema language, cinema technique. And like, I can think of an anime. There's a great anime called Ghost in the Shell. And I just remember breaking down, there's so many different mirrored aspects in this. And this is how we can reflect and learn from ourselves as well. But think about this too. There's this phenomenon of individuals taking psychedelics and getting lost in the mirror, right? People go sit in the bathroom and just stare into the mirror for hours upon hours and hours, and they get stuck there, right? And some people come out completely transform, and other people come out completely delusional. You know, most of them, I hope, come out completely transform, and they really understand themselves better. I definitely did that at one point when I did psychedelics, where I was just like lost in the mirror, and I was like, this is a complete other world, you know, looking at my pupils and looking at all my facial features and all kinds of different things, watching my hair twirl and do all kinds of crazy stuff, right? But another thing I like to bring up about symbolism, I'll bring up two things. The first thing is that another connection to symbolism is like, well, where else do we find symbols, right? Well, we find them on musical instruments, specifically percussion instruments, right? A drum set. They're called symbols. What you hit, and what do? They vibrate, right? They vibrate. So a symbol underneath of it is a vibration, right? Well, what do we call consciousness at its essence? Well, it's a vibration as well. It correlates to the hermetic principle of vibration. So there's a vibration under symbolism, right? But what we hear is a computation of our brain interpreting that vibration, right? And making us understand what it is. And so I think that's important to understand, that it's no coincidence that we call a symbol, and we call a symbol on a drum set a symbol, because they both vibrate. They have this essence of vibration. The other thing is that there's this understanding in, you know, sacred geometry and science called cymatics. And cymatics is this idea, they take granular particles and they put it onto a speaker or something that vibrates, and then they specifically tune it to a certain hertz frequency, and then the particles will create sacred geometrical shapes. And this is becoming really well known nowadays. It's being used in engineering. It's being used in all kinds of stuff. But it shows that certain frequencies actually make these old, ancient, you know, sacred geometrical shapes that we find in all these ancient temples and all these ancient hieroglyphs and carvings all over the world. So they're not just something that we just made up. They were literally already here. It's just that our consciousness is trying to understand that, and we're channeling that into form, you know, into artistic forms, religious forms, and things like this. So cymatics is a cool thing to look up. I think that's really important to understand when it comes to symbols. One more thing in this line of talking.
I also think it's cool, Brandon, that the symbol is that same shape you showed, the absolute,
the circle with the dot
in the middle, which is actually also the symbol for the Pythagoreans of the monad, you know, the absolute.
That's
the first
right.
metaphysical being.
That is absolutely right. So the study of symbolism in philosophy and literature and academia is called semiotics. And semiotics deals with understanding signs, the signifier, and the signified. So you were talking about the signifier earlier. It signifies something to the signified, and then we try to understand that. And then connotation and denotation, that's what semiotics kind of deals with, is these concepts of like, what's the meaning of this? Do we give it meaning? What's the, in philosophy, they call it ontology, the nature of it. You know, what's the nature of this, the virtue of it? Does it have any use for us? You know, the pragmatism of it, the utility and things like that. So I think that's kind of interesting to understand, because you never hear that term. You never hear anybody, everybody is a symbolist or they're into symbolism. They're not like, oh, you study semiotics, you know, and it's like nobody uses that, right? So it's important to understand that, because in academia, they, you know, a scholar will understand that term. And if you use that, they'll be like, oh, this guy kind of knows what he's talking about. He's going to take you more seriously. He or she will take you more seriously. Now, this is something that I really wanted to bring to the table, Chris, and I think it's very, very important. The censorship of symbols is so crucial to understand, right? So I'm going to take it back to biblical terms first. So in Exodus 20, there's this statement, and it says, you shalt not make for yourself a graven image, right? Okay, so this is really important to understand, because a graven image is an image of God, first of all, or an image of the divine. But it literally states, at least in this translation, that you shall not make for yourself any images of God. And what images really are symbols. So what this means is that, hey, you're not allowed to use symbolism. It's literally the censorship of symbolic means to understand God, the divine, spiritual truths, whatever it might be, natural law specifically, I would just say. That's the most important aspect of any of this, is understanding objective morality and natural law. So that's like a really interesting statement to say to people, is like, you're not allowed to do this. You know, we have complete control over you. You're not allowed to use symbolic literacy anywhere. And we see this currently today in the left-right political paradigm, right? It's not just the left who are censoring words. It's not just the right who are censoring words. They're both doing it. You know, it literally is government doing it. It is the dark occultists who control and who created the state. That's who's really doing it. And they don't want you to understand your language, and which that means that they don't want you to understand symbolism. So censorship is pretty much the war against consciousness. And we find this throughout all history, just a little add on to this, where we find that we have this mob mentality that arises in the culture, where these great sacred sites get desecrated. The statues get torn down, the pyramids get destroyed, the history gets completely obliterated. And that's this idea of completely assimilating or obliterating something that is relaying a spiritual truth that fights against the dogma of the church and the state. That's really what it is. They don't want you to have connections to your ancestry. They don't want you to have connections to the ancient knowledge and wisdom of natural law, of yourself, of the world, of many sciences, of biology, of neurology, of all kinds of stuff that the ancients had. They don't want you to have that. So they obliterate it if they can't assimilate it. If they can assimilate it, this is like what the Christians did with paganism, then you'll find it a little bit in these little pieces, you know, throughout
it occurs history, to me, so. Brandon, that, you know, not just that part of the Ten Commandments, but really the first four of the Ten Commandments have more to do with an authoritarian or obedient type structure than they do the rest, which seem much more like actual moral rules. It almost like someone took the six moral rules and then they added these four in front, which are kind of like, right. Don't have other gods, don't have graven images, don't say my name incorrectly. And then this is my day that you should keep special, which if you think about it from any ruling class through history, if you own people's belief systems and they believe in your one true religion as their religion, then you now can manipulate them to do things you want, right? Like if you don't want them doing things on a certain day, you can make a rule about that day. You don't want them writing certain things down that give them power. You know, if everybody had their own gods and beliefs, then they can all, you know, there's chaos, right? But if you want to rule everybody and have everybody fit into your little box, you want to create a belief system that fits with what you want them to do. So it's not that there's not inherent truths in all religions, but we have to also recognize that all religions that exist, especially modern cultural religions, have been flavored with heavy doses of these tyrannical, authoritarian type people in history that are really looking for a way to get the crowd under control, basically.
That's right. Another thing that they like to suppress is astrotheology or astrology and astronomy. They tell you that you're not allowed to practice any of that, especially astrology and astrotheology. They think of it as heresy if you end up practicing any of those things or even studying it or trying to look into it. But, you know, the Old Testament, the New Testament, all the biblical texts, the Torah, you know, they all are just you know, littered, if you even want to use that word. That's kind of a negative term, but it's just so prevalent that there's so much astrotheological knowledge throughout all of it. You know, they're literally themselves in the higher levels and the higher degrees of, you know, let's say the Catholic Church practicing astrology at some level, you know, and when you look into it, you'll see that it's like, it's all about the stars, the celestial movements and the stories that we add to that. And that's a symbolic representation. You know, and the problem with a lot of these religions, especially Abrahamic religions, I would say that's the major issue, is that we've literized these elemental powers, these pure forms. And this is the idea of taking, like what I said with Zeus, taking an aspect of an archetype of the sun and then converting it and anthropomorphizing it into an actual deity being a man. And then now we worship the man, the form, the appearance, and we don't understand the principle underneath of that. And now we have this issue where, oh, well, if he was actually a real person, if he was born into flesh, you know, well, now he can mate, he can breed. And now we have this issue of the bloodline fallacy where it's like, oh, so now we have a bloodline fallacy, which is this idea of who gets to be God's deputies. Who gets to rule over humanity? Who gets to be the divine ruler, the divine right of kings, right? These kings that have been blessed by God with this authoritarian idea to rule over all the peasants of the world, you know, all the people they see.
I just heard Douglas Martin's voice echoing.
Right, right.
That was beautiful.
It's true.
His quote, you know, that plays on your show.
On the Cubbyhole. He says that, but it's so true. It's so true, you know, that's the issue, you know, that's the issue with materialism too, because as soon as we start to do that, then we're in a materialistic concept as well, because it's all about the material world, you know, it's all about ruling this domain. And I think that's one of the major things that people get confused on, because
you brought up the word literal. Because, like, I remember, especially when my kids were getting to a certain age, they were using that word like way too much. Everything was like literally, literally, literally. But that is what they're training you in school, is to be a literalist.
Right.
You take everything literally. And then if you take any religion, the most extreme, more conservative end of that religion, people are going to want to take everything literally. I've talked to many people. I've met a lot of Christians in my life, been to probably many, many Christian churches in my younger days. And many of the people can understand symbolisms, and many, there are many Christians I've met out there that I would agree with on almost everything, because they kind of are able to look at the bigger picture. But
I agree with that.
That's not true for the average normal person going to one of these religious structures. They're just sort of feeding on the feeling or the the front, the show, right? They want to feel good about themselves. And these are very materialistic, literal interpretations that the words have to mean exactly what the words say. And that's exactly the way it's been inspired,
right?
You know, which is just silly. But if you see how much that's happened to the psyche of the average human being, because I think in a way we have so much graphic visual art technology out there that in a lot of ways it steals the imagination. And I talked about this in my presentation, where if you, since your childhood, have been supplied with stories for every thought, it's hard for you to invent your own stories, because your mind always wants to go to the stories that have been told to you. So it's kind of a tricky time in history now. Symbolically for me, back in 2020, when we were looking into, you know, the changing of the wheel on the calendar, the Mayan calendar, right? I was looking into that. I was very curious. And some people that were close to me and friends were like, oh, you think it's the end of the world. You know, they're taking this thing literally, because that's literal translation of what the Mayan calendar meant at that time. And I would try to explain to them, no, I'm looking at what are the deeper implications of what that could mean and the symbolic, you know. And now when I look back, it's very clear to me that that turning of the Mayan calendar symbolically meant the opening of Pandora's box. That was about the time we've reached in technology, when AI has reached a new level, when the World Wide Web reached a new level. All these things have been predicted by ancient cultures. And then now we have this web all over the whole planet, and information is flooded in everyone's mind, in every corner of the world. There's graphics and images, and all this stuff's out there now. So it's a different time symbolically than before. Technology was where it is now. So we have to kind of be aware of the context of the situation we're in and not take things so freaking literal, and be able to stand back, look at the big picture, what's going on.
That's right. I also am not advocating for getting rid of symbolic uses in media or things like this. I think they're very, very important. A lot of people do, though. A lot of people think that the pure naturalistic world is a world without any kind of images. I've literally heard this from people, that no graphic designs, no images could ever be created. Okay. And I think that's a very, very limited point of view on the nature of ourselves, because it is literally limiting our way of communicating to each other. But I do think that the more knowledge, well, I actually know this because this is from personal gnosis, the more knowledge you have about how we communicate these things and what they mean, the less likely you're going to be manipulated to it. So a lot of people have issues with, like, watching movies, right? Well, I personally like watching movies. I've learned a lot from movies. I probably learned more from movies than I learned in my entirety of studying in the educational system ever. You know, I learned more about history, more about culture, more about psychology, more about esotericism. But I will say that I had a little bit different of an upbringing, so that doesn't always affect people the same way that it affected me, because I was raised on some of these principles. So I definitely had a more head start to understand these things. But as you start to understand these things, then, you know, because I know people, I have friends who just, like, will not watch certain movies that I recommend to them. And they're like, no, it's absolutely satanic. I won't watch it. And I'm like, What do you mean? Like, why won't you watch it? And they're like, well, because of this subversive use of symbolism. I'm like, oh, well, you can defend yourself against that. You just have to be conscious of what's taking place. And you also have to mitigate that in a way that you're not repetitively programming yourself, because it's hard to stay conscious of those things constantly, right? It's not like you can be conscious of it every single moment of the movie. You have to, like, bring your attention span back in, right? You have to mitigated in some way. So don't chronically do it. Don't chronically abuse it. But understand it, because it is there to teach you a lesson, and it's not going away. None of these things are going away. You know, we're not getting rid of art. People are always going to express themselves and innovate in artistic means. We're never doing it. Another cool thing is that my buddy's an engineer. He loves to, like, he draws out all these blueprints on like these little note cards, right? And comes to my house and shows them to me. And I'm like, oh, these are awesome. And he's like, yeah, but look at the symbol in the specific gear ratio, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, this is what you were talking about. And he's like, I don't really even get behind symbolism, but it just naturally functions properly in this device that he's created. And he's like, and this is what you've been speaking on. And I'm like, yeah, like this is everywhere. You're going to find it in engineering. You're going to find it in mechanics, you know, like the gear ratios. You're going to find it in electrical work. You're going to find it all over the place. It's so intriguing when you start to see the universal commonality of how these things work, because what we're doing is a natural process of innovating. And where do we innovate? We innovate in nature. And what do we emulate? We emulate nature. You know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to become better emulators of nature so that we can be more in harmony with nature to the degree that we're not infringing upon other people's liberties. And we have great experiences here. You know, we expand our consciousness and we evolve the species. That's the main goal. Evolve the species and get rid of slavery. But when slavery is gone, what do we do then? Does that mean innovation stops? No. Does that mean art stops and, you know, people stop
having... We need
having...
all the more.
Yeah.
I tried to mention in our last roundtable on this topic that if you imagine, like, making yourself really small, like that movie Inner Space, and going inside of the body and seeing how the body interacts. It doesn't use words. There's not stop signs inside of your body and the veins.
Right.
You know, the body communicates with shapes and archetypal symbols, the chemicals. Yes. What else is happening in chemicals? But one chemical showing up at the door of another chemical and they're forming shapes and they're either fitting together or they're not fitting together based on their shape and their inherent makeup. And that's how our body's actually communicating and doing all the amazing things it's doing, is by recognizing shapes and colors and vibrations, you know, which are symbols, right?
Absolutely.
How we live, you know?
Absolutely. Very well stated. Well, even mathematicians use symbols. Think of mathematicians. Mathematicians as purely left brain, right? And they are very left brained. That's what they're doing. They're very analytical. But they have this little bit, it's like the yin and yang. They have this little dot of symbolic literacy going on, because what are they doing? They're using notations and signifiers. And those signifiers are how they make their equations. These numbers, the zero, the one, the two, the three, the four, you know, and all the other letters that come with that, right? In equations. It's like, oh, well, we're using all these. What do these really mean esoterically? Well, they can mean a lot. Like we talked about the circle dot and the circle, right? Well, the zero is there. You know, it's a thing that represents nothingness. It's the most paradoxical thing that almost anybody can conceive, that you can take something to represent something, the lack of something, I mean, the essence of the lack of something, nothingness, right? So then it makes you question, well, is there actually nothingness? Could there ever be nothingness, you know? Or is it just a conceptual idea that it's just not there, right? Like, is there ever nothingness?
Hermetic principle, right? A polarity. You kind of recognize that for everything that exists, mm-hmm. there's something that it's opposites. Everything is a spectrum or a scale. For every left, there's a right. For every dark, there's a light, you know? So
that's right.
We can come to recognize that that's a truth about this reality. And you can almost make certain predictions based on understanding that concept. And that's where these symbols and principles become really powerful, because we can understand things that we can't necessarily see. We don't have to be able to literally look at something mm-hmm. to understand symbolically what it might be or what it might represent. And I just wanted to say one thing that you said earlier, like people that get kind of like offended, like, oh, that's Satanistic symbology, I can't look at that type of thing.
Right.
Like, because your house got burned by a fire, or because you got a burn on your arm, does that mean you never use fire again in your life? Because
right.
you got cut with a knife. Does that mean you never use a knife ever again in your life? These are tools that are existing here in this reality that we're meant to use. And they can be dangerous. They can burn you. They can cut you. But if you know how a knife works and you practice with a knife and you use fire every day, you don't have to be as afraid of it.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not advocating for you to, you know, just or in the knife metaphor, just cut yourself.
You don't have to swallow burning swords.
Yeah, you don't have to swallow burning swords or anything like that. And if you don't want to engage in cinema, that's fine. That's up to you. I think there's a lot of knowledge there, obviously. But I think it's very important for us to understand that, because symbolism is one of the most advanced forms that we can communicate, if not the most advanced forms. And one of the evolutions of symbolism is cinema. There's no doubt about that. Cinema incorporates all kinds of different branches of semiotics and symbolism. So it's really important. I will state that since we're talking about like manipulation and stuff like that, I'd say that for the viewing audience, if you're new to this stuff, if you're looking for a subversive symbolism, I definitely would look into, let's say, like Edward Bernays, look into how he was using his knowledge of psychology to manipulate people. And I also would look into Joseph Campbell, the Nazi minister of propaganda. So look into propaganda. And Joseph Campbell actually, or I'm not Campbell, Goebbels, sorry. Joseph Campbell's the anthropologist, Joseph Goebbels. And he goes on to say that this is the secret of propaganda. Those who are to be persuaded by it should be completely, but it should be completely immersed in the idea of propaganda without them ever noticing that they're immersed in it. So what he's saying is that we don't want you to know that you're immersed in the propaganda. We don't want you to know that you're immersed in a world of images and signifiers. We just want you to be there and absorb it and then behave off of it. You know, we don't want you to know that at all. And so knowledge is the key. It is the pathway to power to defend yourself against all forms of propaganda.
Yeah, imagine being a rat in a maze and not knowing that you're in a maze. All you see is white walls in every direction. But if you have the ability to be objective and read the glyph on the wall where some rat had got out and left you a note saying you're in a maze, well, your attitude and your strategy towards life might be quite different, knowing now that you're in a maze, right?
That's right.
Amazing thoughts.
Absolutely. But,
if you have a little more information to share on the top of your mind, I'd love to hear that. And then like maybe we can kind of start easing into, I want, before we close up today, definitely for you to tell viewers what you're working on and what they can come to expect in the coming weeks, because I know there's some great stuff coming out at seedtruth.com. and Brandon Martin's work. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we'll just go ahead and do that. I'm working on this Beyond the Forbidden Veil series, which is going to be an extensive, in-depth analysis of the occult world. And it's going to be, you know, immensely humongous. It's a big, big project. So each episode will dive into specific topics, but it will be building upon the last episode. So I recommend chronologically working your way through, starting at episode one and then moving on through it. That's mainly what I'm working on right now. It's a completely new style. I'm adding in video. It's kind of like a documentary / presentation / YouTube style in a way. It is available at my website, seedtruth.com, where you can find the links to the YouTube channel, and the videos are on the website as well, so you can check that out. And then the next episode will be premiering tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So that will be episode two. Each episode will be around an hour to 2 hours long, depending on how much time I want to put into that specific topic. The episode after that, we'll be talking about things like what we're talking about here as well, but I'll be getting deeper into pure forms. And just as a little side quote here from Albert Churchward on pure forms, the true meaning of a pure form is not confined to its outward form. It lies in the deeper truth it represents, often hidden from the uninitiated. So that's one thing that I really talk about a lot, is being initiated. And I think that's really important. So episode one of Beyond the Forbidden Veil talks about initiation and how you don't need to be part of any of these secret societies to be initiated. We're all initiated into the secrets of nature as soon as we exist, by the virtue of our existence in itself. You know, innately we are initiated, but we also have to do the due diligence into that. So yeah, that's pretty much it. You can always find more of my work there. You can find the Seed Conference on my Seed Truth page. You can also find it at the One Great Work Network.com. And it's on a bunch of places. You know, it's on BitChute. It's on Odyssey as well. So yeah, that's what I'm mainly working on currently. And then potentially the conference next year for the spring. So Seed 6 conference will be next year in the spring, or sometime next year between the spring equinox and the autumn equinox.
Yeah, folks, putting together conferences is an incredibly lot of parts and pieces in that process. And so you might also want to look up freedomundernaturallaw.com that you can see Brandon Martin has done presentation recently at the Funnel 3 conference. And I also want to bring people's attention to Nate Kapp's work. You know, we were talking about that circle with the dot, and he went into this whole other explanation and understanding about the spire and how it can represent. There's a lot to learn there too. And which brings to mind for me, realization, real eyes. Asian is something that keeps coming back to me, is like, it feels good. It's a joyful process and there's always more to be had. So, you know, pull up a seat at the banquet table of real reality and you coming together and have these realizations. There's always more to be had. This reality is a room of doors. You open one door and there's another room of doors. You open one of those doors and there's another room, and they keep getting bigger and they keep getting to be more doors. So there's really no end to realizations. And there are people like Brandon that are constantly putting out nuggets for you to follow and have these realizations yourself. So I think that's real exciting. I'm looking forward to more discussions. People might want to look back to Brandon and I did two talks on the movie Alien and Aliens. We talked about the whole series. And I think upcoming down the road, I would really like to get together with you and Logan. Have talked about maybe looking at Avatar. I think that movie is an interesting movie that really signifies and symbolizes many of the things that we see happening too, where people are living through an avatar more and more, like the Matrix, as time progresses and as the technological and the agenda for technotronic agenda continues, there is people in the world who are using these symbols against you, and they want to see you basically become a battery for them, for their purposes. And they will be happy to use you if you're not aware of what you're doing. Your energy will be pilfered off from tyrants around the world. So this is tools we're trying to give you, like a knife, so you don't get stabbed. You know, you can hold these symbols and understand what they mean and be conscious of them to defend yourself psychologically, mentally, spiritually.
I couldn't have said it better. I think these tools are crucial for the evolution of the species. If we don't have them, then we will devolve into, we'll just kill ourselves, you know, eventually. We'll just be gone. We'll lose all connections to our true self and to our heritage and our origins, which is so important.
Yeah, it's a crucial time. All the knowledge is out there. You know, the Pandora's box is open. You just have to look. And it's getting harder to look now. So we have to figure out, that's why we're giving tools and techniques of how to look into things, you know, how to look deeper.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Chris.
Yeah, fantastic discussion, Brandon. I know we can just continue on this in different ways, but for today, this is a great episode. We covered a lot of ground, and I really appreciate what you've been doing and the way you share your work, and just like the calmness and the professionalism that you exude. And I hope people take your example of how to become like your own professor, your own inspired, your own, and that's the path that you're talking about of realization was what I'm calling it. But what is it when you start coming into learning the occult, the I'm blanking out on the term that you use right now. The process
at the beginning.
Right? Yeah.
Well, you're autodidactic. It's also initiation.
That's kind of yes, what I was looking for. Yeah.
Yes. Initiation. You're initiating yourselves into deeper knowledge of, you know, the universe and how it works and how your psychology works. A lot of this is just understanding your psychology so that you can defend yourself against psychic tyranny, because these people are psychic vampires and they want to consume every aspect of you materialistically, resources. They want all your resources and they want all your energy, all your attention.
All right. So we need to balance ourselves and put out our word and make the sounds that need to be made to resist and defend against those negative forces in the world. Thanks so much, Brandon. Appreciate you coming today. Great conversation, and look forward to the next one. Have a good one.
Thank you, Chris.